Today on the Cooligans, we are reacting, overreacting, underreacting to the first game of the MLS playoffs round one. We give our predictions on who's going to win the whole thing, who's going to impress the most, and who are we most worried about.
It's too soon, but it's never too soon for Meg Linehan, the absolute best. We talk about NWSL, NWSL drama, women's soccer drama. There's so much happening. And also a couple rapido reactions at the end of the episode. That and more today on the Cooligans.
Happy Halloween, everybody. I'm excited. Carter's excited.
And boo.
Alexis, yes, that's what they say. The ghosts say boo. Alexis.
That's me getting involved.
Alexis is in full Halloween spirit.
Just thank God we didn't have to decorate the studio this time. Who cares, bro?
Alexis is just a big old, you're like, what is it? Like Scrooge.
About Halloween.
I like Christmas. I like Thanksgiving.
Because of the why do you like Thanksgiving and why do you like Christmas?
Christmas.
Isn't it all kind of silly? But
no. But what's the point? For one day you put on something, you're like, oh, I'm a pirate. No, you're not. You're Steve from accounting. You know what I mean? It makes no sense. It's just really boring.
Sorry if anybody's named Steve and it is an accountant.
There's one guy listening going. Damn it. He takes his eye patch off.
His vampire fangs.
Is he here, dude? This is crazy. To me, it's so dumb. It's so dumb. The whole idea of trick or treat feels really stupid to me.
But even as a kid, you weren't into it? Like,
as a kid, I was very confused. But I think it's because I learned English second that, like, my family didn't have Halloween. I'm learning it from school, but I'm like, what's the point? Like, I'm happy that someone's giving me candy. That part I'm excited about.
Sure, you would think that would be something you'd be into, yeah.
But why do we say trick or treat?
I'm sure there's some sort of lore because the kids would be asking, instead of giving candy, you could do a trick for the kids or give them a treat.
It was actually the other way around.
What?
The person would say, like, they would do a trick or they'd give you a treat. You'd knock on someone's door and they would do it for you. I'm pretty sure if I recall.
Yeah, the person who gives the candy now, we just give candy, but they could also do a trick.
Yeah, but at first I'd be like, well, I don't want to see a trick.
We need to bring back tricks to Halloween. Yeah. Thank you, Alexis. Yeah. This is a platform I can get behind.
This is it. Hey, pull a rabbit out of a hat. First of all, rabbit's going to be wild busy. But also, maybe it's because I grew up like in a very dangerous neighborhood where like we weren't allowed to go door to door. So we were one of these families that would go to a nicer neighborhood. Mm. You get like the full Snickers, dude. These people are crazy. You get like a full.
I grew up in a fairly dangerous neighborhood, but I wasn't scared. Give me my candy.
But what'd you do? You grew up in like multi-family Brooklyn, right? So yeah. Like, what would you do? Would you go into the buildings or some people would sit outside?
Both. Sometimes you go. Yeah, there would be a couple times you would go into some buildings and knock
dangerous on. Dangerous proposition.
And knock on like 20 doors in a building. And sometimes you would get stuff.
You go into bodegas, you get cool
bodegas,
stuff.
That
was my favorite. Just you go to
a full platano.
Hell yeah, bro. You go to Caballo Blanco, they would give you half an empanada.
That's a good.
You now have a snack for give you energy to go walking around. But to me, it's just dumb. It's like you spend all this time putting on all this makeup. For what? I don't get it. Like, you're never going to look back at photos. What were you in 2017? You don't know.
I didn't matter.
It was stupid then. It's stupid now.
What did I dress up as a Ninja Turtle one year when I was a kid. I remember I loved my costume so much that I put it on to sleep in the night before. And then my mom woke me up and she's like, why the hell are you wearing your whole Raphael costume?
You think you were a Ninja Turtle?
I was going to dream in turtle that night.
I don't
night.
Get it.
No.
Like, look at yourself now. Just look at yourself.
Yeah. This is feeling like a kid again, bro.
This is making you feel like a kid?
Yeah, bro. This is it. You are so wrapped up in your like being an adult and being serious about everything.
I'm the least serious person anyone
knows.
That's
not true. Because you're saying right now how dumb Halloween is. That's a fairly serious
I don't think that's serious.
Everybody's
I never said it was childish.
Did you see?
I think it's stupid even for kids.
Did you see?
Why you want to be a pilot?
You sound like those Baptist preachers that like Halloween is for the devil. You can't bring Satan into our home.
I think there's nothing devil. I just think it's really dumb.
Y'all agree on that?
No, I just think it's really dumb. In fact, do more things that upset those Baptist preachers.
It is. Did you see Midge Purse? Her Halloween costume. She dressed up as the girl from Joker, Harley Quinn.
Harley Quinn,
and she was walking with all the other Gotham, a few other Gotham players through Times Square and doing like funny TikToks. This is how you reconnect with your like.
Oh no, it sounds so fun. Oh my God.
For the first time since I've done this podcast, Alexis sounds like a huge curmudgeon.
Biggest
curmudgeon in the world. Like, why are people having fun? Why is this fun? This sucks.
Yeah.
Bro, this is the villain in Footloose.
I want everyone to know. I didn't know that was Carter because he's wearing a sheet over him with three holes cut in it. And none of those are for his mouth. So you figure out where the third hole is. he's a horny ghost.
So, Halloween is quite fun and can be quite fun.
I
commend people.
Why do I got to get candy for your kids? I don't open my door on Halloween. I don't open my door. There's no bowl outside my door. Nothing.
Yeah. So I'm look, the neighborhood knows that.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. They avoid the building. Avoid the building.
Okay.
The only time Halloween was cool was college. Got to see wifey in a slutty little outfit. That's pretty cool.
Wow. At least we can find some.
I've never been turned on by a cat before. This is great.
Well, you can keep dressing up. You don't have to stop in college.
I don't fit in the slutty cat costume anymore, Christian. What am I supposed
to
do?
That's a shame. Get double XL.
They don't make it in my size, bro.
Not cool. All right.
Can't even tell I'm wearing a thong. It's just lost in there.
Anyway, welcome to the show. Welcome to the Cooligans, everybody. My name is Christian Polanco.
I'm Alexis Guerreros.
Okay. I'm wearing my little my Daniel Tiger ears. Mm-hmm. Rawr. Okay, Alexis.
That was. Is that what the character does? Or is this just a you thing?
You know, I'm trying to be a little bit of a slutty tiger. Girl,
oh, okay.
For you.
I got to be honest, you nailed it. Buddy, you nailed it.
You know, really embody the spirit of Halloween. So we have...
Are you doing the whole episode with this on your head?
Yes, I am.
Oh, great.
Because we're
How here. Am I going to know if it's you? You know, your costume is so good.
Hot show today, you know, and spooky as ever.
Oh, yeah.
Celebrating Halloween because we're going to be joined by our dear friend to talk about some of the scary things that are going on in NWSL, Meg Linehan of The Athletic.
I should have waited for the applause for you to say Meg Linehan, not the scary stuff happening in NWSL. But yes, Meg Linehan will be here. We're excited about it. But we got to talk about, finally, everyone in the MLS playoffs have had one match in the first round.
Uh-huh.
Obviously, it's a best of three. It feels like it's too soon. It's too soon. But let's pick the best and worst of the MLS playoffs, which is why it's today's top topic, presented by Buchanan's Blended Scotch Whiskey, an official FIFA World Cup 26 sponsor. Nos vamos al Mundial with the Bucanitas in hand.
Let's go.
This is the top topic.
Let's talk a little bit about MLS playoffs. First round, everyone's had a match. Okay, it'd be dumb to decide who's the best and worst right now, which is why you wearing that on your head, we're going to do it, right? Because we're just going to do dumb things today.
Dumb is completely on brand.
Yeah, so perfect for this show. Mm-hmm. I hope nobody got scared by our logo in the background. Let's talk a little bit about the most impressive. Let's start positive. Who's impressed you the most in just the first match of a best of three first round?
So far, I mean,
it's too soon for this. But very
too early, but the Vancouver Whitecaps, what they did to FC Dallas, it was such a dominant and sort of almost embarrassing performance by FC Dallas that we couldn't even really talk about it on the show because there was nothing much to say.
They didn't even show up.
They didn't even show up. I mean,
I believe if you look at their stat line, they had zero XG. They had zero shot. I think one shot on target, maybe.
It was very bad. All of it. Yeah. I mean, I had posted the momentum chart from FotMob, and it was just like you needed a microscope to look to see what if that FC Dallas like showed up. But Vancouver was, they were great. I mean, and I made the comment last time of like them playing against Dallas is probably, and finishing in second in the West was a better situation for them than playing against Portland and playing that wild card winner or whatever. So yeah. Vancouver, my most impressive game one performance in the playoffs.
And by the way, we're deciding most impressive. All of this is minus Miami. Because we could just say Miami's the most impressive. Miami's the MVP.
Even with Miami in this, I still wouldn't say that they were the most impressive.
Okay, so we are removing Miami and Lionel Messi from all of this. So if you ask me who's the most impressive, there's a lot of options. I'm going to go with a team that actually lost. And because maybe it was just that my expectations were so low.
Okay.
I'm going to go with Chicago Fire. Mm. So to me, Chicago Fire showed me something in that first game. They showed me, okay, you didn't walk in here. Maybe it's the Greg Berhalter sort of hangover, you know? You didn't overthink it. You didn't go, oh, we got to do too much of this, too much of that. The players weren't putting their foot on the ball and figuring out, what am I supposed to do now? Do calculus, figure out where the ball goes? They were playing, this felt like a basketball game. They was back and forth and back and forth. And Chicago had opportunities, had chances. I didn't have the most confidence in Chicago's ability to really show up in these playoffs. And while, yes, they didn't win, and it was sort of down to the last second. Sure, to me, I kind of walked away going, you know what? Kuipers, Gutierrez didn't play in the first one. He didn't start in the first one. Kuipers, there's a couple other players where I'm like, yo, they might show up big in these playoffs. And again, to me, what I love about the MLS playoffs is that it's whatever team kind of catches momentum. Usually you want it to be on the way to the playoffs.
Sure.
But sometimes you can catch momentum in the playoffs, especially with three games in the first round. I don't think Chicago are done.
I think they can take it to a third game, very much so. Okay, as far as a contender that is in danger.
So for contender, we're going to go with the top half from the people who hosted the first match. For me, it might be Charlotte FC. It's the only home team to lose.
Yeah.
Granted, they didn't have their biggest star in Wilfried Zaha, and I do think he would have made a big difference. I know you don't agree.
I do not think he would
have. I think he would have been an outlet that they seriously needed. I think it was a little bit easier for New York to kind of figure them out. But for me, Charlotte FC kind of are in danger a little bit. You typically, especially if you're at home, you want to win that first one, kind of get that off your back. And now you're going to go to New York City where the dimensions of the field are just very different. It's a much more narrow pitch than what you're used to.
It's a triangle.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's not exactly, you know, even. What lines are even? You know, who wants to be?
I mean, I hope Charlotte makes a joke about playing in a baseball stadium on Twitter because every team tends to lose if they do that.
Get that out there right now. But for me, Charlotte, still a great team. I think Dean Smith is a great coach. Maybe they figure it out. Zaha comes back. Maybe that sort of opens something up. I think Vargas is very good. I love whenever he's on the ball. Also, incredible fade. His fade is never off.
His fade, I mean, he gets a haircut every 15 minutes.
He might get it at halftime. Just fix it up a little bit. His fade is perfect.
Sure.
But for me, Charlotte might be in trouble.
Sure. For me, Philadelphia might be in trouble. Obviously, we were just talking about the Fire. I think there's a cause for concern. I thought them having a 2-0 lead and then taking their foot off the gas a little bit is a little bit of cause for concern. So I could see at the very least it going to a third game, and I would be surprised if Chicago could win the next two, but it's not impossible. So that's why they're my team that's in danger, because that second half looked a little scary.
Now, I'm going to ask you, playoff MVP, not named Messi, because he's probably going to get the ball. But if you had to pick right now, again, it's too soon, but if you had to pick a playoff MVP just based on the first matches of the first round.
So I thought there were a lot of people upset about the game, or even just the entertainment value of the Minnesota United against the Seattle Sounders. Shout out Lobbing Scorchers.
What was the score line of that game?
It was 0-0 and went to penalties. So I one of the dudes from Lobbing Scorchers, a Sounders podcast, and he was saying that it was haram ball for Minnesota United. But I'll say this, as far as a playoff MVP, and if they could get through and if they can get to the final with this quote unquote evil haram football, I think Dean St. Clair could be the playoff, the MLS Cup finals MVP. I think he will be that important to the way that Minnesota play, which this it was also kind of interesting because they didn't necessarily give up possession for the like the entire game. They weren't just like letting the Sounders take a whole bunch of shots. They had a lot of possession. They controlled the game a bit. They did nothing with it.
And you sure he didn't call it haram ball?
He did. That's what I said.
Not haram football?
I said haram ball.
You said haram football. All right. Because I was like, I said haram ball is what I've heard before.
I think both are valid and fine in this situation.
Also, both perfect for what that was one of the worst matches I've seen.
I did not feel that way. I was actually it was like watching a pitcher's duel. It was just a game. Well, I mean,
I like how Chicago came out like pew, 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 you know, and then you got Minnesota United is like, what if we just hold the ball in the midfield?
I wanted to see how they would match up, and I thought they did a great job, and it was entertaining in its own way for Minnesota.
Look, Seattle's a tough team to beat in the playoffs, right. So to get close or to at least keep it 0-0 in the 90. It's a good job.
And also things ain't clear. Did you see the penalties? Did you see he was kissing the post?
Yeah.
Sticking his tongue out.
Yeah, it was a little Emmy Martinez, bro. Debo St. Clair over here, huh?
I love it.
To me, that's the most important part. Yeah. Is to get, you know, if you're a goalkeeper, you gotta get in their heads, bro.
Sure.
I'm gonna go with Denny Bouanga. This player, man, there's something about the way he plays where he could get the ball, he could try a curling shot and the curl not happen and it just go wide. And he's already walking back. There is no, he's a goldfish, bro. He don't remember what happened 5 seconds ago. It doesn't affect him in any way, shape, or form. He doesn't feel like that's the last shot I'm going to take. He's like, buddy, we're going to be here for 90 minutes. I ain't stressed. Look, I'm going to do 20 of these. Two of them are going to go in.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, it's exciting in a way where like that permeates how I feel. I don't have a dog in this fight. I was watching the LAFC match thinking Austin are getting chances. It's a little stressful if you're an LAFC fan. And then the camera cuts to Denny Bouanga and he's just like, nothing in his head. Bro, the man got nothing in his head.
He's like Dory from Finding Nemo.
Yes. I didn't see that movie. I never saw it.
Yeah, it's a great movie.
Yeah, I know. I hope they get him. but I hope they find him. I don't know what happened. I don't know. Lightsabers, right?
Yeah.
But for me, Denny Bouanga, to me, if it wasn't for Lionel Messi being in this league, probably would have been the league MVP or at least the golden boot.
Yeah.
Right. And to me, I could see why this infects the rest of the team and the fan base. Everyone's just like, chill, bro.
Yeah.
We gonna get him in the end.
I found him to be a little
wasteful.
I mean, there was that one where I forgot who was running on the right and he's in the middle and he's like, all he has to do is just send a tap a ball and a through ball for a 1v1 against the goalkeeper, and he either overhit it or the defender got it. I don't remember exactly what happened, but it was one of those moments of he just didn't make the right decision at the right time for an easy opportunity. And it was a little bit erratic in this game.
But did you see the one where he was one-on-one with the keeper and I forgot what defender it was from Austin slid at the last second and got to the ball before he could really take a shot? The defender's like, come on. Denny Bouanga's like, anyway, what do you guys want to do for? I was like, yes, this is how you get in their heads.
He's locked in.
Love it.
All right. Last one. What coach in the playoffs right now is in trouble?
Who do you got?
I think the leash can get a little bit shorter. Maybe it's not worth a sacking and firing completely. But Phil Neville, I think if Portland doesn't show up in this second game at home, and I think if they don't win, I think the questions of all right, is this the guy that's, going to take us? They lose in the wild card the season before and then losing in the first round of the playoffs. That's not, I think, enough improvement and not a good enough of a sign. And I think the team is good enough to the quality is there to be a little bit more impactful in the playoffs. So Phil Neville's could be on the hot seat, I think, if they don't win.
You know what? Normally I would disagree because I think they, even though they lost, they played well in the first match. And they did make the playoffs, but Portland should be competing for the cup. Not getting to the playoffs shouldn't be success for Portland. So I agree with you there. For me, and I took this away from you because I said it as quickly as possible when Carter asked, it's Eric Quill from FC Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever happened in that first match, a major shift has to happen in the second match. you cannot walk out of the playoffs with two matches like that where you basically do nothing, where your tactics are so disrespected by the other team, where you barely show up. And I know, dude, Vancouver is not an easy team to compete with. You got to make this one hard. Yeah. You got to show up. There's got to be heart, something. You need to show me something in this second match before I go, yo, you need to get sacked. You got to be like, all right, I could see where the team at least rallied around you. This is bad.
Yeah.
You need a bigger hat for the press conference.
Yeah, you don't really see many MLS or even just soccer or football just wearing almost any hat. I mean.
Or do you go, you know what? You go backwards hat. You know, hey, I'm chill. It's going to be fine. I ain't stressed about the second game.
Tony Pulis is like one of the names.
Hat wearer.
I'm trying to think of how many actually like wear a hat regularly.
If you wear a hat on the sideline, does it have to be of the team?
Right. Pulis doesn't wear one of the team, does he? What of the team he plays on? I don't think so.
I think he used to wear a Stoke hat.
Okay, maybe. Yeah. Then. I don't remember. But yeah, you don't see it in MLS. I can't really remember any of them. It's as odd as seeing a goalkeeper wearing a hat. You know, right. Like. All right, Dean Henderson.
Yeah, right? So, what was the Yav? What was the
Yashin?
Yashin. Yeah.
Lev Yashin.
Lev Yashin.
All right, let's go into a little bit more detail on some of the games, the recent games. NYCFC did win their first game at Bank of America Stadium and defeated Charlotte. I mentioned it before. I don't think Zaha would have made much of a difference. I want to really applaud Pascal Janssen here, coach for NYCFC, because I thought the lineup decision was interesting, and it seemed like a big risk. So the first is Kevin O'Toole playing as a left winger when he is a fullback.
Well, he started as a fullback, but the way they would morph when he would when they started attacking.
No. He did not start as a fullback. There was a fullback already. Raul Gustavo was playing.
Was he not playing left back?
He was not playing.
Interesting.
Yeah. So Kevin O'Toole was. If you look at the line, he is a left winger, or you can. He sort of looked. It was like a deep lying. He was more of a left midfielder than a left winger. So he wasn't really waiting or sitting up top outside the 18-yard box like a winger, which would kind of like Martinelli would do with whatever all his step overs there. Right.
And then eventually the ball would get dispossessed by.
So
the
Kevin O'Toole, friend of the show, great dude. I this is one of the things I want to point out about Kevin O'Toole and why I really love watching him play.
He's got like a Arfston flexibility to
him. He's much more versatile than that versatility is being sort of exploited a lot more now under Janssen versus why am I forgetting the previous coach's name?
Not Ronnie Dyla. What's his name?
The other guy. I hate that I forgot.
Yeah.
Nick Cushing. So, I don't think many players are like this. But one thing I've noticed about Kevin O'Toole is that he normally plays left back for NYCFC. And there have been games where he has shifted into the midfield when they go three at the back. And somehow he has been like he has played central midfield.
He doesn't look out of place when he ventures forward. But this, and most MLS left backs or full backs, you don't think have that versatility.
Exactly. So and this is the one thing you'll notice, and you noticed it in this game against Charlotte, is that Kevin O'Toole, when he's watch 2 minutes of him playing left back, and then watch 2 minutes of him playing in the midfield, or watch 2 minutes of him playing left wing, and his physical body shape changes. The way he has like, he must have played midfield as a kid or whatever, because his body, it's hard to describe without actually looking at it, but the shape of his body changes. He almost looks like a different, like his bones restructure themselves.
Are you saying he's a lizard?
I'm thinking he's a lizard man.
You know what?
He grows a tail.
I want to take you back for 1 second. Remember when we were doing the penalty kicks with, was it Thorinson?
Yes.
And then we did like, we waited for the Tati Castellanos to do the keep me uppy stuff.
With Goody, Thorarinson.
Thorarinson.
Yeah.
We waited for we were waiting for Tati Castellanos, and it was post-training. Remember, he went in to eat and, you know, shower, whatever. And while we were waiting there was one guy just hitting crosses left and right, just constantly hitting crosses.
Yeah.
And then trying, getting crosses hit to him and him going up for it just in case those ever happened. And we said to the gentleman that was with us, I said, oh, who's that? He said, oh, it's Kevin O'Toole. It's our new signing. Man, he stays for like an hour and just keeps practicing crosses.
Sure. I think it was him and like Tavon Gray.
Mistaken. Somebody else was helping him. And I was like, huh, look at how far he's come from staying an hour after training to make sure that he's got those cross correct to very clearly was comfortable already.
He was watching us take free kicks. He's like, wow, those guys, bro. I can learn.
Never do what that fat guy just did.
Learn a couple things from those two.
But I do disagree. I think one of the things that you notice about the way New York City FC were attacking is they focused the majority of their attack on the right-hand side. And I do think that if Charlotte had a bit of an outlet, they wouldn't be able to press as hard. They would have to sit back a little bit because Zaha is dangerous. And if Zaha gets the ball in space, that opens everyone up. I do think that would cause a little bit more of an issue.
I mean, we got Tavon Gray back there. He's on Zaha.
I
1v1.
Didn't say I was worried. I'm just saying.
So, but no, I think a bold decision and the lineup for Pascal Janssen, and I think it worked. And that's my belief in why I think NYCFC is going to win the game at Yankee Stadium, even with Zaha there. I think they were just. I mean, we're talking about all this stuff, and we haven't even talked about the Alonso Martinez goal. That was just one of the best goals of the season.
Where was Charlotte, bro?
I love it. Was just such a perfect, like, just tapping the ball. Or I forgot the center back's name, but it was Tim Ream and the other center back. And
Tim Ream looked like he was playing two-hand touch football. Like, he was just like, no.
They were both. It was like, oh, he got it. Yeah. And I ain't got to worry about it because he got it. And boom.
Alonso Martino looked like he lost the ball. Like, he overtouched it.
Yeah.
And then he ran around the defender, and it was right back in front of him.
I thought when I was watching it live, I thought he nutmegged the guy.
No.
And then when I watched the replay, I'm like, this is worse.
Yeah, yeah.
This is way worse than getting
nutmegged. It's like he let go of possession and no one knew what to do with it.
And I loved it. Alonso Martinez's reaction afterwards. He was just like, oh my God, I cannot believe that happened.
Did you just remember you had that on your head as you touch your head?
I did not. I love my little Daniel Tiger ears.
Remember the cartoons back in the day where someone would like wind up a baseball? It'd be like a thing and then throw it in the baseball. And the person would swing, and the ball was just kind of going through. That's exactly what those defenders look like.
Bro.
The ball was just, and Alonso Martinez was like prepared to counter press because he thought he lost possession. And he's like, the ball ends up right in front of him. It was a great run.
Great goal. All right. One more thing. A little bit of controversy here. Jackson Reagan. Early in the game against Minnesota, so Seattle Sounders is Jackson Reagan. Bangwane has an opportunity for a 1v1 against the keeper. He is every other Seattle defender is beat. Jackson Reagan gets there, puts his arm on the back of Bangwane and hits and gives him a little stiff arm push. Just give him a little bit of like. Yo, a little disorient you a little bit on this shot.
You ain't going to have it 100% perfect. Yeah. You know what I mean? Let me off balance you just a
Bangwane
little bit.
Bangwane scuffs the shot, misses it. It goes wide. And when I'm seeing his reaction, I'm like, bro, you are not mad enough about what just happened.
Right.
You
at least got to act.
You got to just be like.
Crash out a little bit. You know what I mean?
Get a yellow. Do something.
You got to show the official. And you know what? Did you see Christina Uncle? She was on some show where she said Martha Two-Footed. I can't remember the player.
Okay.
Martha Two-Footed player. It was the first game she ever reffed or very early in her career. Martha Two-Footed player. In her head, she goes, this is a red card. Oh, my God. I can't believe she just took this player out. The player got up laughing and also helped Martha get up. And, like, they patted each other on the back and kept going. And she was like, oh, maybe it wasn't that bad. Gave her a yellow. And she was like, whatever. They're cool with it.
Yeah.
And then later when they reviewed, they were like, why didn't you give Marta a red card? And she was like, well, the player didn't seem like it hurt.
Yeah.
So this goes to prove you got to get up and be like, my back!
Oh, my God.
He nearly dislocated my shoulder with that push.
Ref, I think I've been shot.
Damn, I need a backyotomy, man.
This was a... I reshare the clip, and I'm just sort of on like Blue Sky. I'm like, what do people think about this? Because... Jamie Watson was on the call for Fox and my teammate on TST. So shout out to Jamie Watson.
Love Jamie Watson. Also, the guy who said Kid Super's kit was the best of the tournament Remember Kid Super goes, one of the announcers said that was the best kid in the tournament. And it like,
oh, okay, okay. Oh, perfect. Look at that. Yeah. All right. So he's on the call and he says that it was like a smart move from Jackson Reagan to give him a little push to make the shot a little bit more difficult. Mm-hmm. This is, I mean, maybe it's as a player, you're looking at it like the context was soft enough that it wasn't like a dog so red. But I sort of compare it to if a player is about to take a shot and in the follow through hits your foot or trip or you accidentally trip them. It's incidental contact. You didn't mean to foul them. It wasn't like a foul that had a ton of force or anything like that. But it's still a penalty or it's a foul. It could be a dog. So whatever. The idea that you can't do that. You can't accidentally trip a player, but you can intentionally push them as they're about to take a shot so that the shot is like not a clean shot or whatever. And I understand if you can like shoulder them or put a little bit of force, but if you are absolutely beat, the context is the player is in front of you. You're looking at his back. You push him in the back and you push him forward so that he has a more difficult time to take a shot. How is this not a red card? Dog show. You are out of this game. It's just like, even if it was the lightest contact in the world, like the context of it is like, you got beat. He has an opportunity to take it's an obvious goal scoring opportunity. And you are denying him the obviousness of the goal opportunity.
I blame the striker not making a bigger deal of it. You know what this is like? You know how annoying it is when somebody pushes you as you're about to strike a ball? Because you dialed it all up in your head.
Yeah, you
know,
yeah, you already see the vision.
It.
Yeah.
You got it. You know it. And then all of a sudden you make no contact and you're screwed. You know what that's like? You know when you're a kid and you're doing a piñata, right? And you make contact, so you're like, you kind of understand where it is. You're blindfolded. Mm-hmm. And then your dumb uncle lifts the rope and gets it out of the way. So you swing hard as hell and there's nothing there. You know that heartbreak?
Yeah.
And you hit your family laughing
and
at
now,
you.
And now you've hit your uncle with a bat.
I already did, dog. And I got this bat. I'm about to find out where I make real contact.
But it's like, Mom, why is there blood all over my back?
Damn. What's wrong with this candy, bro?
So, nah, man. I please, anybody listening, watching, what do you think? Put it in the comments. The idea that this isn't a stone cold red is mind-boggling to me.
The fact that a whistle didn't blow at all. You know what I mean? And at least go rewatch
it. And then Carter sent me... This happened with Raheem Sterling a couple years ago where Kyle Walker pushed Raheem Sterling.
Of course, he would pull up a Tottenham from, what was that, 2016?
Tottenham City. And same thing. Raheem Sterling, 1v1 with the keeper. Kyle Walker is behind him. He's just trying to, disrupt the play any way possible. Pushes Raheem in the back and also no call.
Yeah.
So I don't
know. That's what got Kyle Walker the move to City. And that's what got Raheem Sterling.
Put it out. He's like, hey, whatever you were paying him, give it to me. Yeah. So no, I don't, this can't be the precedent. I don't even, because if I was playing, if that was me taking the shot and somebody pushed me as I was taking it, I would be livid. This can't be, somebody has to explain it to me in a way, because that even if it's some of the arguments were the contact was not like hard enough for it to be, you know, a foul.
Yeah.
Who cares how hard the contact is? You.
If I'm the ref, I say, hey, push me how hard you pushed him. Let me see. I want to know. Push me.
Because that was absurd. So yeah, I think Jackson Reagan is very lucky to be playing in this in game two against Minnesota. So all right, let's take a quick break and then we're gonna talk some NWSL and some U.S. Women's National Team with the one and only Meg Linehan.
All right, welcome back to the Cooligans. And now it's time for one of my favorite guests we've ever had on the show. She's just the absolute best.
The homie.
The homie. Day one, okay? when it comes to women's soccer, at one point we were shocked to find out that she was the only full-time women's soccer journalist in America.
Mm-hmm.
Now there's so many more eyes on the sport, but we don't care about
now,
that.
Now there's three.
Yeah. Yeah. We don't care about anybody else.
That's progress. No.
Yeah. This is the only take we care.
A trailblazer.
Lots going on in the league. Not all of it positive. One day it will be. but the one, the only for The Athletic, Meg Linehan, everybody.
Meg, what's up?
Oh, you know, yeah, one day we'll actually just talk about soccer and it will be great. But it's, you know, it's the season is winding down. So we need to have something.
Yeah, sure. Well, today's not that day.
Yeah. This is what sport is. I think we've worked in this field for quite a while. And sport is more than just kicking a ball or mm-hmm. shooting a puck or whatever. There's a lot going on. And we have to talk about the recent article of the New York Post, my favorite publication. I would say next to The Athletic. But
why use it as toilet paper? So I'm glad they still make it.
I was going to say former NWSL player. It's very soon to be my former NWSL player. Elizabeth Eddy wrote an op-ed in the New York Post. First posted it on like Twitter, and then the New York Post was like, "Hey kid, we like the cut yeah. the cut of your jib." Yeah. And we got
it. Oh, you also want to watch the world burn? We'll post it on ours.
You want to write some bigoted stuff that sounds intellectual? We got the publication mm-hmm. for you. She writes in an op-ed about quote unquote protecting women's sports and keeping transgender or intersex people out of the NWSL, and that the NWSL needs a stronger policy. And on its face, I read it and I'm like, I could see how dumb people might think that this is not bigoted, but. You know, you wrote about it, and what is your circle and your what are people talking about when it comes to seeing something like that?
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that I think I'm prepared to agree with Elizabeth Eddy about is the fact that the league does actually need a policy in place. There was a policy back in 2021. We don't know what happened to it. It just quietly disappeared before Commissioner Jessica Berman came into the league, but the league never said anything about that, right? So the league has just been quietly operating without a policy on, let's call it gender eligibility, right? To be fair, the policy that existed, not very good, had a lot of critiques from actual players, but it was a policy at least that could have been molded or shaped into something better. But because there is this vacuum, and what has taken the place of a policy is a lot of quotes, it's like, we'll live by our values, and our values are inclusion, right? Like, it sounds like the vaguest thing ever. You have players now that might say, like, well, I can put my viewpoint out there and have it stand alongside this, or you could have some sort of outside agitator come in and look at this league and be like, well, the league doesn't have a policy, and you have all of these groups that want to protect women's sports, and now they've got a window here.
Yeah.
Here's the part that upsets me the most is that, you know, the whole article, and I didn't get to read the entire thing, but the parts that I read are like, we need to stand together and we need to protect the players. And it's all of this like fake, if we hold our hands and in unity and in part, mainly because I guess I've had experiences talking to her, I can see like the weird religious sort of spin to a lot of this. It couches something that is exclusionary, not inclusionary. And for me, it's why do this on the way out? Why do supposedly on the way out? We don't know if she's done with her career.
She's played 80 minutes in 3 years. She's on her way out.
Well, she was too busy trying to burn a cross. I was on the pitch, burning a good cross. To me, it reeks of like, well, I'll find a career post. I'll find a second career post. It's
the Riley Gaines pivot.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, come on, Newsmax. You need a sports segment. To me, it feels more opportunistic than anything else. The protecting the players is
100% agree with that. But I think there's also this other layer to it of any rhetoric like this, and the fact that this immediately got picked up by an outlet like OutKick, right? Like, all you're doing is weaponizing this viewpoint for bad faith actors to now like take a look and be like, I mean, it's Jalen Hinkle all over again, mm-hmm. right? Like, we've experienced this in the NWSL. So I think there's that, but you also look at the way that the New York Post presented this article. When you share it on social, you have smiling white girl in the corner over a photo of Barbara Banda, who has already experienced so much harassment, who is a cisgender woman playing in this league who does not violate any policies. And so you are actively causing harm by putting this opinion out into the world and hiding it under this, well, I just want everybody to have a fair game to play. Sports aren't fair the way that you think they are.
Yeah, I think the point you made about weaponizing this perspective, I think it is, people are sort of bending themselves. I mean, we see what is going on with the Trump administration and how anti-LGBTQ they are, and especially this just so diehard focus on trans people, and it's all been like focus group tested about, you know, men playing in women's sports, and it's like this fear mongering. It's just, and it's like for the players themselves.
How many trans women are even
zero?
Talking about this, protect against who?
The other part of this too is Elizabeth Eddy in this column writes, you know, any team will find a competitive advantage to win. And I'm just like, do you think that GMs across the NWSL are like holed up in their office being like, well, if we sign Christian Pulisic and we put him in a wig and we get him some medicine, like no one is doing this, right? What? Like it's not,
of all
it's
church
not
played
a problem.
Juana Man for Elizabeth Eddy and told her it was a documentary. That's what I want to know.
I also love that's the name you chose as the player. Christian He's Blitz. The last.
Yeah, probably who would agree with her article.
It's weird. I think it's obviously you would expect a diverse, a lot of diverse opinions within the NWSL. We know so many NWSL players. We've met so many. We know, off the record, they are a little bit more honest about how they feel about players like this that have these views. And I think for a lot of them, they're just like, look, I got to go to work. And sometimes these are the people. You don't have to like everybody that you work with.
But wouldn't it be weird to work for, like, I don't know, Raising Cane's and yet be anti and be vegan? You're and loud about it where you're like, this is murder. Anyway, you want four chicken fingers? It's so odd. You got to go back to work, dog.
Yeah, yeah. And we've met Elizabeth Eddy several times and nothing but one of the most polite people. I do. The one thing that we did notice that was at least perturbed us a little bit, and this is not necessarily bad, but we were at a Gotham game.
There's like a chaplain who comes around. There's like
They do like a prayer before the game, which is very cool.
Sure. If you want to pray, go for it. She ran up to us. Like very excitedly, like, oh, I bet you didn't think we were going to ask you to be a part of this.
She was like,
she goes, hey, you wanna join in the prayer with us. And I go, oh, God, no. I was like, no, what?
I was like, with respectfully.
Yeah, no.
No.
No, you got your fantasy and mine's over here. You know, I just don't believe in anything.
Sure.
And she looked at me like, oh, I didn't realize you were the devil. So I didn't know that.
That was definitely a sign of like, oh, okay. She's just like into it more than definitely than we are.
Yeah.
But the thing I hate the most is that the people that are like God first and this are the people that are like,
not all,
not all, but this tends to happen. It's
there's
like
a correlation.
You weaponize the Christianity. You weaponize the religion.
And by the way, I went to Catholic school for a long time. Got expelled from public, and I don't remember this being taught. I remember
no.
I remember God talking about a lot of accept everybody.
Yeah,
but sure. Yep. Maybe not your God. why don't we talk about NWSL a little bit? At least on the pitch, Casey Current. You know, we talked a little bit about Greg Berhalter having this sort of renaissance with his back in the club game away from the national team. You know, Vlatko, same thing. Casey Current are steamrolling in a league that's a lot tighter than I think a lot of us expected this year. But Casey Current stand above everyone else. Can anyone stop them? What are your thoughts?
I mean, I do think the answer has to be yes, right? Like we've seen, obviously they've got the shield locked up. They are by far the best team across the regular season. The problem is now that you get into knockout rounds of playoffs and they have actually lost games, not many, only three, right? So they are beatable. The question is, you know, they have just looked like they are on the run of their lives when it comes to form. And so can the Washington Spirit, Orlando Pride, right? Like we've seen teams step to them before, but right at the moment, I mean, if you probably go look at NWSL odds, like the current have to be just completely odds on favorites to lift the trophy at the end of the season.
Yeah, yeah. I asked my bookie, Chauncey Billups, about it. And he told me to bet on the current.
Yeah. He has the dice rolled on their own. It's very odd.
No, it's a. We were at the game where they lifted the shield. They played the Rain that day. And even...
The Rain didn't show up.
But they were locked in while they were playing, to the degree where Lola Bonta did not start that game. We're sitting maybe like four rows behind where she's like warming up. And I'm like, I wanted to say hello. I was like, Lo.
By the way, that's exactly how loud he did it. I was like, I'll show you. I stood up and went, hey, yo, Lo! Like super loud, where everyone turned around except Lo.
Except Lo.
Didn't know there was an audience there. She could care less.
She kept watching the game. They were up like 2-0 already. I'm like, Lo, come on. You can look at the crowd a little bit.
You're winning, Lo.
But no, they looked fantastic. So, it's going to be tough for anybody, I think, to compete, especially playing at their stadium. I think it's going to be really difficult throughout these playoffs. You mentioned the Spirit. They are they don't have Trinity Rodman. She's dealing with an injury. It's a knee. Is a knee or leg or something?
MCL sprain.
They think that she might make it back for the playoffs, depending on how far they go. But how far can they go without Trinity Rodman?
I mean, I think this team is honestly pretty deep, right? Like Trinity Rodman is Trinity Rodman. We saw when she came back from injury earlier this season, came on, immediately scored, right? Difference maker, game winning goal. So you cannot like overstate the importance of Trinity Rodman for the Washington Spirit. That said, they've added a player like Sofia Cantore, right? Who plays for the Italian
the
national team.
The backheel queen.
Seriously, right? So, I mean, this is a team that is still stacked and... Again, like you look at the way that things are shaping up, the two best teams across this year, even with all the Spirit's injury woes, have been the current, head and shoulders above everyone else, the Spirit. And then I think there's that kind of next tier where, again, we've already seen the Spirit are locked in for home playoff games. And then everyone else is fighting for seeding. And I think that might actually play out through the playoffs as well.
Let's talk about that seeding because 3-7 kind of up for grabs. I guess the most important thing would be to try to get a home match. Who do you think needs a home match the most?
I mean, what is going to be really interesting is there's one game that I think is going to play the biggest role because Orlando and Seattle are playing each other on decision day, right? And Orlando and Seattle are currently 3-4, separated only by a point. So if one of them wins, that might actually open the door for another team to like sneak into that home quarterfinal, whether that's, I mean, San Diego, Portland, Gotham are all also in that mix. But I kind of think Seattle, right? Like Seattle historically, I mean, both of those teams honestly have struggled with attendance and in some pretty interesting ways. But Seattle have that narrative of playing for Lauren Barnes, who is retiring. And I think they've got all of that momentum around her. And so... I feel like they want a home playoff game really bad to send her off in the best possible fashion.
Yeah. I mean, speaking of like retirement, this season is like a oddly just somber, sad, like Allie Riley.
Kristen Press, Kristen Hamilton.
Because the nature of, I think, retirement nowadays is like you have a whole podcast package. Release
you have a
trailer. Yeah. I'm like, why y'all all making me cry at the same time? Why y'all all so good at this? Yeah. How have you all so deeply managed to like connect with me emotionally?
And how did you all get the license for End of the Road by Boyz II Men? All of you?
Y'all have the same account or something?
Elizabeth Eddie heard Boyz II Men. She was like, what? Not our league.
So it is a, I mean, when you see whether it's, you know, like some of these players are, they probably could go on a little bit longer if they weren't dealing with a lot of injuries. Like, I mean, we mentioned Trinity Rodman earlier. I'm like, she's like one of the players. I'm like, I just stop these injuries. I don't want the back, the knee. I don't want any of this stuff. But when you think about those, especially Kristen Preston and Allie Riley, Lauren Barnes, like the quick, I mean, impact of like what you think these players mean to the league as a whole, And then just to women's soccer, because obviously they've been incredibly impactful, but just seeing how people are reacting to them now is it's a stark reminder of that.
Yeah, I think it's so fascinating too, because obviously when a player like Kristen Press retires, you are able to kind of look at the national team part of it, right? And I think that tends to override what happened within the league. But when if we even just keep it to Lauren Barnes, Allie Riley, and Kristen Press, these were three players who, I mean, Lauren Barnes has appeared over 250 times with Seattle, right? Like, we're never going to see that number again. This is a person who shaped that program alongside Jess Fishlock and Megan Rapinoe and Lauren Harvey. And the way that that team functions now is always going to have Lauren Barnes' stamp, whether she's there or not. Allie Riley has been, I mean, like, Allie Riley is, again, you want to talk about lovely human beings, and Allie Riley is minimum top three, if not higher. And so you think about how important she was to Angel City as a captain, right? Like, this is the new NWSL, and to have someone who had been around since the earliest days and who is not a U.S. national team player, right, who's coming at it from the New Zealand side of things and who knows what the resource issues are across women's soccer, I think is so important. Then you add in Kristen Press, who, you know, when I wrote her story about her retirement, right, like, so much of her career, I think people looked at her and thought that she was being selfish about where she wanted to play or how she wanted to approach her career. And wasn't until years later we understood the abuse that was going on at Chicago Red Stars, and like, why she didn't want to go to Houston, or why she didn't want to get traded to a team without her consent. And that happened to her multiple times throughout her career. And that's now all stuff that people take for granted in the NWSL because of collective bargaining, right? You have to get agreement from a player to trade them. And it seems really obvious, but it was not at that time point. So I just hope that the memories that they have and the way that they shaped this league is something that, you know, folks like me in the media, fans, the next generation of players, we can carry that legacy forward, because that's so important to the NWSL to not forget the, like, honestly really parts of this league that they lived through and improved only because they believed in the league and the players that made the league what it is.
Yeah. I want to ask you a question about the league moving forward. I know we didn't prepare you for this, so feel free to take a second to think about your answer. But, you know, when I look at the way the league is sort of, the part we're getting to now, it feels very like post 2008, 2010 MLS, right? Rough years, but now all of a sudden it seems to be this big light at the end of the tunnel, and there's so much more focus. You know, I feel like the W has had this incredible growth over the last few years. Women's sports has had this incredible growth over the last few years. We've seen new leagues, the USLW, right? The Super League, the Northern League, all of these incredible places that women can now go play professional sports, that they don't just have to try to get in the NWSL. Europe seems to be growing leaps and bounds. The Champions League is so much bigger and more important than it feels like it had been previous years. There's so many more eyes on it. NWSL feels like they're in a place where they're starting to look at expansion fees as a big part of their growth. And that gives me a little bit of fear, because I was really hoping NWSL would be just a bit more pure in their approach, in their growth. And I'm starting to fear that the NFL-like mentality that kind of got its evil claws, if you will, into NMLS is now starting to permeate into NWSL and its growth. And that scares me a little bit, because it says, you know what, you're going to become more insulated. You're going to become more, you know, the same way MLS is. Do you see the same thing I see? I see you nodding your head a little bit. Do you see the same thing I see? And are there some things maybe we are not hearing or not seeing that are maybe trying to push it in a different direction? Or is it just sort of headed down MLS 2.0, basically?
I don't know if it's headed directly down MLS 2.0, but I think that's always been a real concern, right? One of the strengths of NWSL is that there are independent teams. You look at a Casey Carr, right? Like, or an Angel City. And let's even set aside the on-the-pitch stuff, but facilities and being able to, like, control your own destiny and the branding part of it, right? Like, all of those are really good indicators that the NWSL has the juice, right, culturally. The WNBA, and this is what I wrote my, like, State of the League column about at the start of the year. The WNBA is such a cultural driver in this country in a way that the NWSL is not. And so I think for me, like, Alexis, I got to come back on the pod because we got to unpack this a lot more.
You're welcome. I would love to do an entire hour on this.
the thing that I'm watching for this upcoming offseason is Trinity Rodman's going to be a free agent. And I don't know if the current salary cap is going to be enough to keep her in the NWSL. And Trinity Rodman, to me, is the number one contender for cultural driver and next star of the league that the NWSL has. And are they going to lose her on a free transfer to Europe because they simply don't have the roster rules in place for the Washington Spirit to re-sign her? Like, that's the number one question for the start of this offseason. And that, I think, is going to shape a lot of this conversation moving forward.
Right. Like, how many other players do we think can be on Call Her Daddy and have a good episode? Trinity Rodman's was amazing. Obviously, her story is incredible. But again, that culture.
But that goes to show the star power, right?
Sure.
And when you talk about what builds leagues, like, look at the WNBA. There's three or four names that immediately pop in your head when you hear the W or hear the WNBA. Mm-hmm. And those are names that carry the league. And maybe it's because, you know, college soccer just doesn't have the pull that college basketball does. And, you know, players like Caitlin Clark and, you know, Reese can kind of pull you into the WNBA if you weren't already a fan because you followed them mm-hmm. during basketball. If you have that in NWSL, you have to do everything you can to keep them there
yeah.
and not go to Europe.
What they could do is do a press conference and just absolutely tear down Jessica Berman. Attack the commissioner. That's the way.
Seems to work.
WNBA. That was it. It was an entertaining press conference. I'll say that.
I mean, that's going to be the other really, like, how much the WNBA changes with this next CBA, right? And what level of fight that takes it to, I think, is also going to come back and inform the NWSL as well. But, I mean, Alexis, I 100% agree with you that the metrics that I think the NWSL values right at the moment are expansion fees and Sportico valuations, and neither of those to me actually indicate a healthy league or not.
I agree. Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly.
And also, you're speaking to about, like, when we were at the game, the Kansas City Current game, Jessica Berman handed the NWSL shield. She was booed relentlessly.
Every commissioner gets booed.
No, but this was different.
But that's new. That's new in NWSL.
Yeah, that was.
Like,
that
you know what? Just NWSL fans, huh? You got to boot a commish.
So,
you know what? If you handed the trophy, Meg, it would have been. They would have had to get a SWAT team to keep the fans off the pitch.
Standing O, bro. real quick, U.S. Women's National Team. They played three games. They played two against Portugal. They lost the first one.
6-0 against New Zealand.
New Zealand. I don't know the conversation right now, but obviously we're still, a couple of years out from the World Cup. But the thing, at least I'm seeing a lot more now, is about the midfield and who's going to be in the midfield, who we feel strong about, and especially the team getting younger. But Lily Yohannes seems to be the name I'm hearing a lot more about. Like,
yes,
she needs to be the starter. And
great TikToker.
Great. I mean, as far as what that midfield could look like in a World Cup, I feel like she's. You might agree that she should be there. What are who are the other two? Are the other two depending on the formation?
Yeah, I mean, it's so up in the air right now. I mean, I think what we saw out of the New Zealand game, it's really hard to read into that New Zealand game, right? Yeah, just where New Zealand is as a program, mm-hmm. but. I think when Sam Coffey, to me, still feels like the starting number six, Lily Yohannes. And then, you know, if Rosavell is healthy, I think Rosavell is still one of the most creative, best players this team has ever had. And the New Zealand game, again, Rosie and the kids, right?
Yeah,
she was the old lady on the field, which is so wild
so
to me.
Crazy.
But I think when Rose is healthy and at full powers, it's really hard to keep her off the field because of what she offers the U.S. Women's National Team. So
I loved
as it stands right now.
I loved her. I mean, the goal was incredible yesterday. But she was talking to Melissa Ortiz afterwards, and Melissa was like asking her about the goal. She was like, I don't know, I just hit it. I'm like, no, you didn't. That was a rocket. Yeah. That's amazing.
Off a half volley, like.
I just did it.
But it's Pete Roosevelt.
I mean, Sam Coffey was on our show a couple weeks ago, and I mean, as far as embodying a sense of leadership, she carries that even on podcast interviews and stuff like that. So, there is a was the first loss against Portugal any cause for concern?
I mean, I think any loss for the U.S. is always going to be a cause for concern, but it's really hard to read into it. I mean, it was, I think everything that could have gone wrong went wrong, and it was super uncharacteristic, but you would rather have it happen in October of 2025 compared to World Cup qualifying or the World Cup itself. And so, like, that's the question, is we're not actually going to know until, like, 2 years down the line of, was this a fluke, a blip, as Emma Hayes called it, or was it a real warning sign?
It was set pieces that ended up doing him in. But and they did a simulcast or, like, an alt cast with Kelly O'Hara and a few other players. I forgot who the other were. But Kelly O'Hara was, like, watching it back. I mean, like, why is nobody marking? Yeah. You know what I mean, like, get Kelly O'Hara on the sideline.
Get her back out there.
And then, just before we let you go.
You've said that three times now. I feel so bad.
Sorry. Congratulations.
There we go.
We got a new mom on the show. Meg, you are, your child is what, almost 3 months right now. Mm-hmm. And so, first thoughts. First review. What's the article going to be? What's the headline?
Overrated, underrated.
What's the headline?
Overrated, sleeping 8 hours in a row.
Who needs it?
Yeah.
How are you doing?
No, it's been so much fun. I think it's also like, it's like last, I was watching the New Zealand game with Salem asleep on my chest. And I was like, this is so much better than like working. I just get to sit and watch a game and try not to react and wake him up.
Okay.
Yeah. So, this is your goal celebration. Yes.
It'll be, you have about, enjoy this, because you have about roughly 10, 11 months before you think you're just going to hold the baby and watch it. And that is not, the baby's going to be interested in everything else. Yep.
Right. That's why I said, if I ever have a kid 18 years old, I'll just, you know what I mean? Just walk in, sit next to me, we'll talk a little bit. We'll get to know each other from here. I don't want to change you. You don't want to change me. You're going to change diaper.
He's going to get raised going to Vermont Green Games.
Yeah, that's
so awesome. I think, we'll have a little soccer fan for sure.
I love it. Again, congratulations to you and the family. And I know it's
so awesome.
I have a 2.5-year-old. If you want a peek into your future, just hit me up anytime. I'm happy to give any advice I can. Meg Linehan of The Athletic. Everybody go read Meg's work and listen to the full-time podcast as well on The Athletic, their podcast network as well. Meg, you're the absolute best. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you for having me, as always.
Shout out to Meg Linehan, always crushing it.
Her one of my usual, favorite people on the planet.
Seriously, one of our dear friends. A new mom as well. So congrats to her as well. So let's wrap up the show covering a couple quick stories in the latest edition, the spooky edition of Rapido Reactions. So... we have 90 seconds to give our thoughts on all these particular topics that producer Carter will be tossing at us. So, Carter, go for it.
All right. The first one here is a little breakdown of what's going on in Catalan with Lamine Yamal. Apparently, the Barcelona hierarchy are not happy with him after his recent statements during the Kings League, his Kings League appearance, and are now having his agent monitor his social media presence. Mm. What is your take on this?
Spanish media is not treating dark-skinned players correctly. That's what a shock.
I think the people in Catalonia are offended you call them Spanish.
Yeah, that's a good point. Sorry. Only that part. Like, the rest of it, we understand.
Total agreement.
If it's, but the first part, look, I think at the end of the day, you know me, I forgive a lot when it comes to youth. I excuse a lot of these activities because I would have been way worse if I was a kid that incredible and had that much money. I'd be doing way worse and no one could tell me different. So to me, I don't care. If he's playing well, until it affects his gameplay, I don't want to hear about it.
Yeah, he's there are things with his age and maturity that will come, I think, organically. But the reality is that he's a spectacular player. He's paid a lot of money. He is an asset to the club, and they're looking after their asset, and they're going to. I wouldn't even be surprised if
the Barcelona front office are giving stories for the media for them to put out, to put a little bit of pressure on
the
media.
They absolutely do that.
Yeah,
they
absolutely very, very common.
They so, as in clubs, not just Barcelona.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So you wouldn't maturity will.
Is he the biggest player in La Liga?
No, Mbappe is.
I still think he might be.
We'll see. All right. Well, a lot more. We could go on for hours on that. All right, what's next?
All right, next up, Vinicius apologized for his little, his fit he threw when he was substituted in the Clásico. But he skipped one person in his apology.
Yeah, important person.
We can go into this, but he skipped Xabi Alonso. So what's your take on his apology?
Like, look, I've never been to couples therapy, but I've seen a lot of it on TV. And it feels like the therapist makes one person apologize to the other, and they're like, all right, you know what? You acted out a little bit out of hand there. Mm-hmm. You need to apologize. You stand up, you apologize to the couch, you apologize to the wall, you apologize to the TV, but never to your wife. That's kind of how this feels. Like there's, I think Vinny can be a little petty and a little immature and a little, what about me in some of these moments? And I think Xabi Alonso, the real test for Xabi Alonso is, tactics, you're incredible. As a player and as a captain, you were great. Can you manage these personalities? And probably the toughest test is someone like Vinny, who feels very volatile.
And
volatile in a dangerous way, volatile in the, I'm an emotional roller coaster, sure, and you have to monitor this every 5 seconds.
Right, right.
And this is a big test for Xabi Alonso. What do you do from this point on?
Yeah, I mean, these statements that you put out online are usually very curated by somebody. They discuss what they want, who they want to apologize to, and it's very clear and very deliberate. And the fact that he was like, the club, the president, the fans, and that's it. I'm not apologizing to anybody.
I didn't miss anybody, by the way.
So he kind of, he's saying something without saying something. And you would imagine that there's some, I would imagine that the club is behind Xabi Alonso, because I mean, they've been fantastic this season. So Vinny's the one to me that is going to have to get his act together quicker than Xabi Alonso. All right, what's next?
All right, Juventus have a new manager, Luciano Spalletti. Is this a good appointment? What's going on at Juventus?
At this point, Italian managers are just a revolving door. Mm. Like, you can't even hate another team because you're probably going to manage them in 6 months.
Italian Serie A is like, well, you know those friend groups, the big friend groups that all date each other.
Yeah.
It's like you dated Stacy, and then also she dated Rob,
the new girl. You know what I mean? Everyone dates
y'all. All date each other. Like y'all,
it's we ain't
like,
got enough budget for extra actors, so y'all gonna end up dating.
Why
each other?
Y'all so cool with this?
Yeah. Why aren't other managers getting a chance in Serie A?
Yeah.
Serie A clubs only hire former Serie A managers.
Yeah, I've heard about this, and that the Serie A style of play is so focused on like results, and that it's that I think I saw something like getting your coaches badges and or your license
in Italy
is different.
It's extremely tough,
and it's like much more difficult than other countries. So I think that's
but also you don't need an Italian certificate. You know, you don't need to get your badges in Italy to coach in Italy.
Yeah, but regardless, the
Italian clubs prefer people who did.
Yeah, because it's just such a results based. Sort of, there isn't like big TV money. In fact,
you have to give a dissertation. And I was trying to find Roberto De Zerbi's dissertation. I heard it's great.
Okay. Well, as far as Juve, as long as Weston McKennie's doing all right.
Yeah, well, he got abs now. I'm happy for him, bro.
All right. What do we got next?
All right. It's come out recently that Endrick is going to leave Real Madrid to go on loan in January. And the main team that he is linked to is Olympique Lyon. What are our thoughts? Would this be a good move for him?
Well, this is the same move that Mariano Diaz made from when he was the Real Madrid striker.
Everybody remembers that. everybody's on DominicanFootball.com. To me, this is great for Tanner Tessman to have an even better player that you could pass to. They're doing well. What are they, in fifth right now?
I think fourth, but even
they are in fifth.
They don't want to play, Lacazette. What's up with that? Obviously, this move for Endrick is really more about the World Cup. He wants to be in that 2026 World Cup Brazilian side, and he needs to play. He's not going to get many minutes over Mbappe. Mbappe's barely ever going to go to the bench unless there's an injury.
It'd be cool to be his age and have the list of requirements he had for the team that he wants to go. They must be competing. They must be one of the top five leagues or be one of the big three in Portugal. Mm-hmm. They have to be in Champions League. It's pretty great. It's like, you know, hey, no filler, no one under 6 foot.
No BBLs.
No baby mama drama. It's like, yo, you're kind of toxic, but I kind of get it. If you're that age, you could pick any club you want. Well, who's going to say no to Andrew?
I still think, you know, a Brazilian talent getting picked up, get plucked out and brought to these tremendous clubs is a big step. I mean, it's a difficult, it doesn't always work out. And he should, where did he come from? Not Palmeiras. Where did he play for?
I don't remember.
I forgot where he came from. Not Santos. I don't remember. He should have gone to Lyon first. You know what I mean? Like that would have been like the more reasonable step instead of the responsibility of Real Madrid. All right. We got one more.
He did come from Palmeiras, by the way. Okay. So the last one here. So Gio Reyna did a whole interview.
And
he came out and said that, you know, the whole 2022 debacle with his teammates in the entire U.S.M.N.T. with Greg Berhalter and all the drama with him and his family and the team was not entirely his fault. And he's not taking full blame for it. So why is this happening right now? What do you make of this?
Can I give you the positive of this?
Sure.
Finally, we hear from him about it and we can close that loop. We can move on from this.
Sure.
This still felt like it was lingering because he never said anything. This raises a couple more questions, but hopefully this is it. Can we move on from this?
Sure.
This stalled his career. Yo, Greg Berhalter is doing just fine.
Sure.
You know, Claudio Reyna, Daniel Reyna, they're doing just fine. Gio is the one who ended up taking the brunt of this. His career is taking the brunt of it. Did he have something to do with it? Was it his attitude? Who knows? There's a lot of questions. But at the end of the day, his career stalled to the point where this is most we've heard from him. We haven't heard, you know, we haven't seen highlights from him, his time at Gladbach. We haven't seen those things where he should be a star right now. He should be balling out so he can be on the men's national team. Can we move on from this? And can we get the old Gio back?
I'm going to say no.
You're probably right.
It's hard to move on. I'm not necessarily saying that this was a bad thing to do. There's a lot more quotes. He said it's not entirely my fault because I just wanted to play. And he's like, I didn't handle my emotions correctly. And he couldn't control what his parents were going to do. Really, that's where it went way too far.
But that was after the whole team voted to send him home.
Right. Yeah.
There clearly something happened beforehand. You are at fault somewhere.
Yeah, but that, and I think he's accepting some of that.
Yeah.
I think the backlash of, like, especially everything that happened with his parents, mm-hmm. is the thing that he's taking the brunt of. That is not fair.
I agree, yeah.
So,
you know what didn't help? Remember the next day they put out a photo of him wearing sunglasses? Walking out, that didn't help.
Are you being serious?
Like, I don't think. Like, yeah, no, that is.
Oh, they're being serious.
Yeah,
okay.
He had like aviators on. It was like, it felt like, oh, look at me, I don't care. I was like, oh, it's just optically bad.
So, all right. Happy the reactions in the books and another cool episode of the Cooligans in the books as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Meg Linehan.
Thank you, Meg Linehan, for joining us. We love you. We appreciate you. And it's always great to, Meg Linehan is like one of our day ones. I mean,
for real.
She's always been supportive and been on the show a bunch of times. So, Just a couple quick reminders. On November 9th, Alexis and I will be performing at the St. Mark's Comedy Club for the New York Comedy Festival. Where it's like it's called Juggling Jokes.
We didn't name it.
We didn't name it, but our friend Alex Carabaño is hosting it, and we're gonna be there. And there's gonna be a couple soccer jokes and stuff like that. So be on the lookout for that. So if you want to get tickets, the link is in the description right now. If you're watching on YouTube or go to our Instagram, you can go to our link tree and you'll see the link there if you want to get tickets in New York for the New York Comedy Festival. So come through if you're in the area. I'll wear these ears if you want me to.
Please don't.
So thank you, everybody. Make sure you subscribe to the show on YouTube if you have not yet, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify. Hit like on this video as well, wherever you are watching or listening. And tell a friend. Send this to a friend if you loved, I don't know, Alexis's take on Finding Nemo. I don't know. So feel free to do that. All right. We'll see you on Monday with a brand new episode. And we'll be talking about all the MLS playoff games over the weekend and NWSL decision day. All right. Take care, everybody. Peace.
Love you guys.